Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, I'm joined in the studio by Andrea McNamara, Head of Private Client Law at EY Law. Andrea, lovely to have you back with us. So we're going to talk about how parents of children with intellectual and developmental disabilities can financially plan for their future. We did talk about this before in the programme. We had a huge response, though, which is...
Yep, we did.
Yeah, we wanted to come back to it again, and people can keep those questions coming in. 51551 is the text number. Now, this is really sensitive, and it's really difficult for people to address this, to face it, but it's so important that they do, right?
It is, and it's something that I see all the time in my work because it touches so many families across the country, firstly, but also it's something that, as you say, Claire, is so sensitive to them. Parents are generally really concerned about what's going to happen when they're no longer around to provide for their child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't know how to structure an inheritance for the child. They want to make sure that they're properly looked after, but they may also be very aware that it would not be appropriate for large capital sums to pass to their child, so for direct inheritance to go to them. So I often find that they're looking for advice as to how they can structure that inheritance so that they ensure their child is protected, but also the assets are protected and that they're maintained so that the child can be provided for.
And do you find that it helps alleviate a lot of the anxiety when you sit down and you do this? For
absolutely.
All of us, for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that generally applies to wills also, but in this situation particularly so, because, you know, as I said, it is such a concern for parents. So mm-hmm. when they have this structure in place at the end of the process, I really do see a sense of relief with my clients that they feel, okay, great, at least now we know that there is a financial structure in place that will ensure that our child is properly provided for.
Right, and we need to talk about this thing called a discretionary trust.
Yes.
Will you
yes.
explain that to us and how
yes.
it works?
So a discretionary trust is the structure that I would recommend as the most appropriate structure to provide for a child with additional needs or a child who might be fully incapacitated from maintaining themselves. Essentially, what would happen is that, say, in the parents' wills, they could set up this trust called a discretionary trust. They could leave assets or a portion of their estate to the trust, and they appoint trustees who would generally be family members or friends to manage the trust. So the trustees would run the trust fund and they would make distributions from the trust for the benefit of the child with additional needs. So instead of assets passing to that child that they don't have capacity to deal with themselves, you essentially have the trustees stepping into the parents' shoes, managing the trust fund, making sure that all of the child's expenses and needs are catered for so they can ensure that they have somewhere to live, that, you know, all medical care expenses are paid for. And also, depending on the level of capacity, they could make distributions to the child at a level that's appropriate. So often I see that parents want to maintain as much independence for their child as possible. So if there is a level of capacity there, then the trustees can, you know, manage distributions and make sure that they make distributions at whatever level is mm-hmm. appropriate so that the child doesn't feel that they're wholly reliant on this trust.
You need to be very careful who you appoint as trustees. How many do you need in those circumstances?
You should have a minimum of two. I would usually say that the optimal number is 2 to 3. It really, it depends. You know, what I usually say to clients is if you have an obvious 2 people that you can think of or an obvious 3 people, go with that. Don't struggle to find a third if you can't think of a third.
Mm-hmm.
But I would suggest a minimum of 2. And as I said, usually they are family members and friends because
okay.
your trustees don't need to be lawyers or accountants. They will go and get legal and tax advice.
Right.
So you want somebody who could make a sound decision based on the advice that they receive, but who also knows your child well and would have your child's best interests at heart.
Okay, and that's a call that you would have to make as the person who's
yes.
putting that together. Right. Now, this listener question has come in along with the many others that we're getting this morning. We have 3 children aged 24 to 30. Our youngest child has autism and will never be in a position to own or rent his own home. We'd like our youngest to stay living in the family home when we've passed on, and the older 2 are in full agreement with this. We'd like the family home to revert back to the older 2 if he should predecease them so that they can sell the home and benefit from it financially. So the question they have, if our youngest son should by any chance marry or cohabit with someone in the family home, would this person be entitled to the home in the event of him predeceasing the other 2, or will it revert back to the other 2 as we wished?
So that leads directly into the discretionary trust that we were just talking about. So by using a discretionary trust here, you could cater for everything that those clients want, in that what they could do in their wills is say that the property is to pass into a discretionary trust on their death for the benefit of their child with additional needs. The trustees can then let that child live there. And then when the child passes away, the property passes to the other son. So you're again making sure that it stays within the family and it goes to their other child. But if the property is held in the trust, it doesn't belong absolutely to that child who's living there with additional needs. It's maintained within the trust structure. If the trustees decided, so say if that child did get married or wanted to cohabit, it would actually be up to the trustees whether they would allow the spouse or partner to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, because that child doesn't absolutely own that property, if say he passed away and the marriage broke and or the marriage broke down, then that property doesn't form part of his estate. So his spouse or partner shouldn't have any rights in relation to it. But again, as the trustees would be making the decision as to whether the spouse or partner could live there, they could get advice in advance of that and make sure that, say, an agreement is put in place where the spouse or partner would acknowledge that they're not acquiring any rights in the property.
Okay, well, that's pretty clear. And this next one, I have an adult son with additional needs, also a younger adult son. How do I plan to provide for both, assuming my husband and I will eventually need to go to a nursing home and he will need sheltered housing? So it seems as though they feel as though they have a lot of demands potentially coming down the track.
Which again is quite common, because it's very difficult to know what you're going to need for yourself in your later years. And that should always be, you know, your primary concern is to make sure that as parents you retain sufficient funds to look after yourselves for your lifetime. What I would suggest here is that, again, in their wills, they could set up a trust for that child with additional needs, and they could divide their estate in portions or percentages. And I suppose what they need to decide is what portion do they feel should pass to the trust for that child and what portion should pass to the other trust. And maybe they feel that the child with additional needs needs more provision than the other child, if the other child is self-sufficient and, you know, working. But I suppose ultimately, whatever funds they use during their lifetime, they'll use, and then their estate is whatever's left, and then that can be divided in portions between the children.
Okay. Now, this next one from parents says that our daughter suffered brain damage as a baby and has voids in her comprehension, especially logic and numeracy. She has a Leaving Cert and she has worked since she finished a PLC course 28 years ago. So she's doing well. She's in a career that she loves, but it's not well paid. So the parents bought a house for her. It's in the name of one of the parents, and I have a will which will protect her. We have left her house to our grandchildren, so eventually the grandchildren will get that house, but the daughter has the right to live in it for the rest of her life. We've suggested in our will that a trust be set up for her after our deaths, with relatives acting as trustees. So they seem to be pretty on top of things, but they just want to know, is there anything else that they should consider there, Andrea?
I'd just be slightly concerned there where they say that they've suggested in their will that a trust should be set up. So I don't know if they've expressed a wish in the will. I would suggest that they should set up a trust in their will.
Do the discretionary trust now.
Yes, yeah. Okay. It wouldn't take effect until death, but it should be clear in the will that a trust is being set up. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that property should pass to that trust under their will. So instead of necessarily giving her a right to reside in it, I would let the property pass into a trust of which she's a beneficiary. The trustees let her live there. And then I think it was grandchildren they want to benefit on their death. So again, the trust could provide for that when that daughter passes away, the grandchildren ultimately inherit the house at that point.
So it sounds like the trust is the way they
it
should
is.
Go
so it's
well.
Just to make sure that she actually has that trust set up in her will rather than say a wish that a trust would be set up.
Okay, here's somebody who's considering a trust as well. I have a child with severe additional needs and they would like to know if they put money into a trust now and if they make a will around that, does that mean we cannot touch that money if we needed to before we die?
Again, a common question. So generally, no. If the trust is set up in your will only speaks from date of death. So it means the trust is never set up until death and nothing flows into that fund, the trust fund, until you pass away.
So you do have access to your money.
You absolutely do. You can still buy and sell all your assets. You can, you know, use the funds. So it would only be whatever you say is to pass into that trust. Say again, if it was a portion of your estate on death, that's when it passes in. So you're not crystallising anything now. Now, you could set up a lifetime trust if you like, and then you could put funds into it now, and once you put funds into it, they are gone essentially. You have settled those funds on trust. But most parents would choose to set up a trust under their wills because they feel that while they're around, they can look after their child. It's more when they're gone that they're concerned. But some do set up lifetime trusts also.
Okay. Well, that's answers that question. Now, a couple of general ones coming in as well, Andrea, which I know you're great at taking on the fly. Dave has no family and would like to leave his property to his nephew. But what if my nephew, he says, passes away before me? Who does the property go to? My nearest sibling or my nephew's family? And what does that mean in terms of inheritance tax?
So if the nephew passes away before Dave, that's something that Dave should cover off in his will. So if he's saying that he's leaving the property to his nephew, usually then we'd include a clause saying that, but if my nephew has predeceased me, I leave the property instead to whoever he wants. So then whoever he leaves the property to would be inheriting that property from Dave. So then the inheritance tax implications are that it's an inheritance from Dave, and it depends on the family relationship to Dave.
Okay, so he needs to he should put that into his own will.
Exactly, it's up to him.
Yeah. Okay, this listener would be grateful to know the inheritance tax implications for a child living in the Republic of Ireland who inherits a property located in Northern Ireland. Would they be subject to tax regulations in the Republic or in the UK?
Unfortunately, both.
Oh.
So yes, if you have a child resident, if a beneficiary of a gift or inheritance is resident in Ireland, then they're subject to Irish inheritance tax on that inheritance. And then also if the property is situated in Northern Ireland, because it's a UK situate asset, UK inheritance tax would arise. So you could have both taxes.
We couldn't be doubly taxed.
No, so there should be a double tax credit available. We have a double tax treaty with the UK for inheritance tax. So the beneficiary should be entitled to a double tax credit. It's just something they need to get advice on, because actually speaking about trusts, sometimes trusts can trip that up and lead to a double tax credit not being available. So it should be available, but it's definitely something that, you know, if they're planning this inheritance, they should get advice on just to make sure.
Certainly should. I'm glad we got
you
to that question.
You don't want double tax. No.
You do not want double tax. Andrea, thank you so much for coming in. Andrea McNamara, who will be back with us again. Andrea is Head of Private Client Law at EY Law.